Thank you so much, Choir. Wonderful hymn. Thank you, Jennifer, for leading us and the praise team. And thank you for being here today on this first Sunday of 2019. We're so glad that you're here worshiping with us. And I've been praying about this day and how I could challenge you. And it's a new year, and we often think about New Year's resolutions and challenges. And so I decided on this series, which I'm calling the 52-Day Challenge. And so in a minute, you're going to hear why I'm calling this series the 52-Day Challenge. But let me just say at the outset that it's my hope that over that God, 52 days, as we walk through this and enable you, will use it to inspire you and enable you and kind of free you up to change something about yourself. I'm not going to prescribe what that is. You know what that is, and to change something about your world. And so that's what I'm hoping will happen over the next 52 days. Now, we're calling this the 52-Day Challenge. You must be wondering, like, where does that come from? That's such an odd number of days. We're calling this the 52-Day Challenge because this series is coming from the book of Nehemiah. Now, raise your hand invisibly if you know the book of Nehemiah. Okay, don't raise your hand. Some of you do, some of you don't. But you may remember that the beginning of that story, Nehemiah, this character that we're going to talk about, hears that the walls of the city of Jerusalem are in shambles and in ruin. He hears that the people are in captivity. And he hears this news and it saddens him. And he actually goes to tears and it just breaks his heart. And so because of this, he acts, and he begins to build and rebuild the city of Jerusalem. And he harnesses the energy of all his people. He fights off all of these enemies. And here is the amazing factoid about this incredible story in the Bible. He completed the job in guess how many? Oh, come on. Guess how many? 52 days. And so that's incredible. In just 52 days, Nehemiah completed this task that God had given him. Now, before I go on, I want to clarify something about this series. I want to clarify, and this is just so important, that this series is not a comment on our current political environment around immigration and building a wall. I just want to throw that out there. That is not what this is about when I talk about Nehemiah building a wall. In fact, you know, it really could have been anything that Nehemiah rebuilt. He could have rebuilt the temple. He could have rebuilt homes and buildings. He could have rebuilt anything that reflected the spiritual life of God's people. And so this story, although it's about rebuilding this wall, that's a historical, it's really all about restoring people's hope. And so it's not about a wall. It's really all about hope. And so what I want you to hear from this story, for God's people in Jerusalem, that he felt this broken heart, that he went to tears, and because of that, he took action. And the miracle of the story is that he changed his world in 52 days. And so that's the Nehemiah challenge. That's the 52-day challenge is, are you doing anything at all in your life to impact your environment? Are you doing anything in your life to make a difference? Are you doing anything, I mean anything at all, to change your world? And Nehemiah did, and he offers us the Nehemiah challenge. Okay, but let me just continue this way. Let me just say that if you're the best of the best, if you're the brightest of the brightest, if you're one of those people who was voted most likely to succeed, if you're one of those people who was the most popular, if you were the top athlete in your high school or college, if you were this really super effective person, I want you to know that God can use you to make a difference. I want you to know that there's no doubt in my mind that God can use you to make a difference. And I say that, I only say that because in this specialized What I really love about this story is that God specializes in using ordinary people to carry out his greatest purposes. And rather than extraordinary people, he uses ordinary, common people to carry out his purpose. And so ordinary people become what I would call ordinary heroes. Okay, but before we talk further about that, let me ask you, who is Nehemiah? Do you know who Nehemiah is? Do you know the story of Nehemiah? We know from scriptures that he has kind of this incredible sounding title. He is cupbearer to the king, to a king called Artaxerxes. And so you say, well, what is a cupbearer? Well, as important as what a cupbearer is what he is not. And what we know is that Nehemiah was not a priest. Nehemiah was not a prophet. Nehemiah was not a prince or a warrior. Nehemiah was not even really a significant leader. Nehemiah was a layperson who carried out the role of cupbearer to the king. And that sounds pretty good. I mean, he had the job of tasting the wine and offering the wine to King Artaxerxes. And you say, well, that's not a bad job. And it's not a bad job for the most part. But the reason that Nehemiah was the cupbearer to the king was he would taste the wine, right? And make sure that there was no reason the king shouldn't taste the wine, right? And so if Nehemiah tasted the wine and there was poison in the wine, Nehemiah would be gone and not the king. And so this is a situation where as if you have a well-loved king, then this is a great job. You don't have to worry about that. But if you do not have a well-loved king, well, then you're going to worry about it because every time you take a sip of the wine, you know the reality of what could happen. And so many commentaries also say that, you know, really Nehemiah was just a glorified butler, that he was a pretty average, ordinary guy. I would say, however, in the end, that the thing that distinguished him from everybody else in this story was that he had a burden from God that he felt deeply moved by, and he decided to change it. He looked around the world, and he said, you know what? There's really nobody else addressing this. It may as well be me. And he changed it, and he did it in 52 days. That's who Nehemiah is. So let's read through this story and see what God may be saying to us today from Nehemiah chapter 1 and verses 1 through 4. Let's look at verse 1. The words of Nehemiah, son of Hakaliah, in the month of Kislev, in the 20th year, is the month of, while I was in the citadel of Susa. You may be wondering, what is the month of Kislev? And I kind of looked that up, and it looks like to me Kislev is like somewhere between October and November. It's not Christmas, it's more like Thanksgiving. And by the way, the commentaries also said that this was the year 444 BC, so this is 400 years before the birth of Christ, and Nehemiah is in the citadel of Susa, and Susa is in modern-day Iran. So that's the time, that's the place when verse 2 happens. Let's see verse 2. Hanani, one of my brothers, came from Judah with some other men, and I questioned them about the Jewish remnant that had survived the exile and also about Jerusalem. And so he's questioning these men that come to him about the people in Jerusalem and their situation and also about the city of itself. In verse 3, he says, they said to me, those who survived the exile are back in trouble province, are in great trouble and disgrace. And here it is. The wall of Jerusalem is broken down, and its gates have been burned with fire. And verse 4, and here's his response. When I heard these things, I sat down and wept. For some days I fasted and prayed before the God of heaven. And this is what happened to Nehemiah. And so let me just back off of this for a minute and give you some context about what's happening here. I mean, this is a pretty incredible response that Nehemiah has about the city of Jerusalem and about its people. He's weeping, he's fasting, he's praying, there are tears flowing. And so let's unpack this so that we can understand why Nehemiah responds the way that he did. And what we know from history is that the walls of Jerusalem had been in ruins for many, many generations. And that there were many reasons that this was a concern for the people. But one of the main reasons that this was a concern was that often the walls were viewed as revealing kind of the spiritual condition of the people. And so if the walls were in ruin, there was a sense in which the people were in ruin. If the walls were broken down, there was a sense in which the people were broken down. And so this affected Nehemiah greatly. And this is why he broke down and he cried. His people, his homeland, it just wasn't the same as it once was. And I can really, I think we can all understand that. If you've ever lived in a community, I grew up in Newton, Iowa. What a great place to grow up. Home of the main Maytag company. And when I was growing up there, it was thriving. It was booming. I mean, Maytag, Newton Manufacturing Company, the Newton Cardinals. I mean, it was incredible. But when I go back to Newton today, man, Maytag disappeared. They got bought by Worldcom and they moved them out. Newton Manufacturing went belly up. And I see my town. Now, it's nothing like the news that Nehemiah was taking in, but I think we can understand what happens to our towns and how they affect us. And so the question is, how did it get into this state of affairs? How did Jerusalem come to be in such ruin? And of course, that's a really, really long story. But in a nutshell, let me just put it this way. In the Old Testament, God told his people, hey, if you obey my commandments, if you follow after all of my rules and seek after my goals, then you will be blessed. On the other hand, if you don't follow after my commandments, then, you know, you won't be blessed. And so this is how the Old Testament writers interpreted and viewed life. This is the lens through which they looked. And sure enough, the people of Israel kind of fell off the wagon and they started worshiping other gods and pursuing other goals. And so there were consequences for them, according to the Old Testament, that the Babylonians came in and they took down the city and they carried away the peoples. And just and worsely, they burned down the city gates and tore down the walls and just left the place in ruin. And for hundreds of years, the center of Judaism was absolutely in ruin. That is, until later, when there was another group that came in, and they were kind of the world power at the time, the Persians, and they decided to let some of those Jewish people go back home to Newton, Iowa, to try to restore the place and build up the temple and build up the people. But they had such few resources that they really couldn't carry it out. They couldn't make it the place that they remembered it to be, and it was just left in ruin. That is, until this one man, this one cupbearer to the king, this one glorified butler, this average, ordinary human being named Nehemiah, and here's where we're going to have some fun, until Nehemiah had what I would call a Peter Parker moment. All right? Now, do you know what I'm talking about when I talk about a Peter Parker moment? Do you have any idea who Peter Parker is? Peter Parker, come on, people. He comes out of the Marvel Comics stream. Peter Parker, if you read his story, his parents, I think it was Richard and I can't remember the wife's name, somebody Parker, were killed in a terrible accident. And so he was taken in. Do you know the story? He was taken in by his aunt and his uncle, and they raised him in New York City. And do you know what happened to Peter Parker? Somewhere along the way, he was bitten. Are you with me? He was bitten by a radioactive spider. Now, is anybody catching on to who Peter Parker is, right? He was bitten by this radioactive spider, and he assumed, even though he was ordinary, I mean, look at the guy. He's very ordinary. He's got the glasses. He's kind of standing there looking out into space. Very average guy. Sometimes he felt really inadequate, like he didn't have everything that he needed to have within his being to, you know, be anything in the world. But Peter Parker, after being bit by this spider, he assumes these spider powers, right? And so sometimes in his life, when evil is just triumphing over good, when all bad things in the world are mounting up bigger than the good things, Peter Parker becomes who? Who does he become? Spider-Man. That's right. There he is, you know? And it's like he can't not respond to the situation that he's facing. He can't just sit there in his job, in his average, ordinary self, being Peter Parker. He's got to go and respond to this thing that's happening in the world. And so that is what a Peter Parker moment is. It's that time in your life. It's that thing in your life. It's that thing in the world that you can no longer deny. You can't walk away from it. You can't give up on it. You decide you've got to respond to it. And it's a Peter Parker moment when you go into action. And that's what happened in Nehemiah. He heard this horrible news. His homeland has been decimated. The people have been taken away into captivity. The city is in ruin. And Nehemiah, this average, ordinary cupbearer to the king, this guy that was not a prince, he was not a warrior, he was not a prophet, he was not even a pastor, he was not a leader, he was an ordinary layperson. He has this, it's incredible, leaps into action. It's an incredible story, but it's one that we see all over the scriptures. I mean, God is calling Moses, and he's calling Moses to lead his people Israel out of bondage. And Moses absolutely refuses. He's called by many the reluctant prophet. And even when he does sort of go along with it, it's not even that convincing. But he refuses because he feels inadequate. He feels ordinary. He feels like his history is not that great back there in Egypt. He's been running from that whole thing, but somewhere along the line in that passage of Exodus, he has a Peter Parker moment, and he decides he's willing to lead God's people. It's all over the scriptures. I mean, the Israelites are in a great battle with a group called the Philistines, and every day there's this massive Philistine man. He's 9 feet tall. He's got all the armor on. He's got all the iron, the whole deal. He stands out there in the middle of the valley, and he absolutely mocks all of God's people, and he mocks God's purposes, and everybody's shrinking back in fear. We're inadequate. We can't take on this guy. He's extraordinary. We're ordinary. Until this one young boy, and David slays Goliath. You know, it was a Peter Parker moment that moved a man called Martin Luther King Jr. And he was looking around his world and he saw all of these African Americans being mistreated. They had to go in the back door of the, dentist's office. They had to go in the back door of this business building. They couldn't share the same bathroom with all the other people. They had to do all of these special things. They couldn't go to the same schools. And pretty soon, Martin Luther King Jr. had a Peter Parker moment. He said, I'm not going to take it anymore. And he stood up. And he changed the world because he decided to respond. Have you ever had a Peter Parker moment? This is what this series is really about. Is there something in your life that you just can't stand it? Is there something in your world that when you see it, it breaks your heart? You know, the really incredible thing to me about this story of Nehemiah is that his call and the whole 52-day challenge, it didn't really start when he acted on things. It didn't start when he acted and he went to King Artaxerxes and he said, I need your help. We're going to talk about that next week. He went to the king. He said, I need your help. Here's what I want to do. He had a crystal clear vision about this thing. It didn't start there. It didn't even start in chapter 1 when after he received this news, he went to prayer. It didn't even start with a prayer. Do you know when the 52-day challenge started? Do you know when God had that Peter Parker moment for Nehemiah when that happened? It was that very first moment when it says, and I heard the news, and I sat down, and I wept. That's when it all started. Nehemiah sat down, and he wept. I mean, that's just like God to do something crazy like that? I mean, it didn't start with Maya standing up and pumping his arms in there and saying, I got it. It started when he sat down. Is that just not remarkable? And he wept. But you know, as I started to think about this, I shouldn't be that surprised that these tears led to this amazing transformation. Because when you look at the scriptures, there are many times when tears lead to transformation. You know, I'm thinking of Moses, and his mother put him in the tar-covered basket, and she floated him out into the river at just the right time when the Egyptian princess was down by the river. And what caught the Egyptian princess, if you read it, is that when the baby started to weep, when tears were flowing, King James says, and behold, the child wept. It was at that very moment that the Egyptian princess swept him to her arms and said, we're going to raise this boy in Egypt. And it changed the world, right? Because of that, Hannah desperately wanted a child, and she prayed and prayed and prayed, and she wept. And because of it, she had Samuel, who would go to anoint David and lead to the line of Jesus. There was Naomi in the book of Ruth. She lost bitterness. She was weeping bitterly until a woman called Ruth walked. She was weeping bitterly until a woman called Ruth walked beside her. And from Ruth ultimately came Obed, who came Jesse, who came David, who came Jesus. Jesus famously wept. And then he raised Lazarus from the dead. I'm telling you, tears lead to transformation in our world. I'm telling you that tears can lead to change in your world. And so Nehemiah sat down and he wept. But I want to push on this just a little bit, because this is a brand new opportunity. I'm not just asking you to walk around weeping. That's not what I'm asking you to do at all. I'm asking you the question, is there anything in your world when you feel it, when you touch it, when you're around it, that it just absolutely breaks your heart and you can't stand it? That's what we're talking about. Is there anything in your world that God is calling you, an ordinary to change? To transform. It still happens today. I love the story of Agnes. Have you ever heard the story of Agnes? You don't know the story of Agnes? So Agnes, every day she would get up and she would go to her workplace at St. Mary's High School. And on the way, she would always pass by this very deplorable place, this place that was broken down, this place where people were being mistreated, this place where children were starving, this place where there absolutely nobody cared about any of these, absolutely nobody, every day walking by that place until finally people, and she just kept every day walking by that place until finally she could walk by no more. She could not address this situation. She had a Peter Parker moment, and Agnes, who also became known as Mother Teresa, hello. In 1950, she started the Mission of Charity in Calcutta, India, and she changed the world. Nehemiah sat down and wept, and he fasted and he prayed. And 52 days later, the world was changed. That's the 52-day challenge. Are you impacting anything? Are you changing your world in any way? What is God calling you to do? Let's bow our heads for prayer. Heavenly Father, we do thank you for this 52-day challenge. And I pray, God, that as we walk through this, that you would lay something in our hearts. And it could be simple. It could be anymore. School that everybody ignores, and you're not going to ignore that kid anymore. It could be you're feeling that maybe you do need to plug into a mission. You've never done it. You've always been a little feet, but you're going to look for a mission to plug into. It could be anything. But I pray, Lord, that in these next 52 days, you would call us and empower us, enable us to have a Peter Parker moment that we might change our world. And I pray these things in Jesus' name.